This is the CFL Preview Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
CFL kickoff almost upon us once again. It is time for the CFL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Scott Rintoul in Vancouver, and in Calgary, Will Nault and Matt Rose. And it makes sense to go to Calgary because that's where the Grey Cup currently resides. That's where the Grey Cup will be decided this year. Gentlemen, welcome. Looking forward to doing this. How are you guys doing today?
We are excellent, man. Yeah, it's always fun to kick this around and make us look like fools on predictions, but that's what we're all here for, and yeah, happy to do it.
Luckily, this year there's extra turnover in the league, so predicting is going to be even harder for us, but yeah, happy to be back for another season, and really excited to get after it once again.
And that is certainly a topic we will cover in some depth as we go across the CFL over the next couple of hours. The amount of turnover, the amount of big names that changed places. But the one thing that has not changed in the last number of years, the top team in the West. Three straight Grey Cup appearances for the Calgary Stampeders. They finally get over. And as I mentioned, a lot of pressure to get back to the big game as it will be hosted at McMahon Stadium on November 24th. What is the biggest story in Calgary this offseason?
I think the biggest story is the defense, and Maddie's been at every day for training camp, so he can certainly go in depth, but you know, you look at this team, and I know Dave Dickinson's talked about it, a guy who's been in this league as a player and a coach for a long time, almost spanning three decades, and when he goes out and says on the defensive side of the ball he's never seen this many spots up for grabs, that tells you where the biggest question mark is. I think obviously bringing back Bo Levi Mitchell was huge for this team, but they lost two-thirds of their defense. They lost their defensive coordinator. And I think all eyes, Matty, are on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you, especially once Bo Levi Mitchell did re-sign here. Brad Erdos going down on the offensive line is definitely a story, but you can't overlook what's happened with this defense, losing seven starters in the offseason. You mentioned Devon Claybrooks, who's now the head coach in BC. Now, depending on who you talk to in the Calgary organization, Brent Monson, who is promoted from the linebacker coach to the defensive coordinator job, he was super involved in everything that was going on with that defense. So depending on who you talk to, the transition from Claybrooks to Monson might not have as big of an impact on the defense as some people are thinking, but at the same time, you've got a lot of change as far as the personnel goes. It's different than some of the other situations, though. Calgary didn't go out and make a ton of off-season signing splashes. They basically just promoted a bunch of guys who were on the roster last year. You look at Winton McManus and Corey Greenwood, guys who were on specials and are probably going to be the two starting linebackers. They've got Brandon Smith back, Trey Roberson's back. There's some guys on the defensive line who are back that maybe didn't have as much of a role last year with guys like Ja'Garrett Davis here and Micah Johnson here, but at the same time, guys who the team expects to step into a role and produce.
And part of the reason Calgary's been so successful is that they have replaced internally. They've always groomed that next player so that if they have lost someone of repute over the years, they've had that next player able to step in. Not as easy when you come to a player like Alex Singleton, arguably the best defensive player in the CFL over the last couple of years. You guys mentioned Devon Claybrooks, who's the head coach in BC. Alex Singleton is in the NFL as we speak. Which of those is more difficult to replace in Calgary, the defensive coordinator or your top defender who played in the middle of your defense?
I think it's Singleton, and I like to, he's like a cheat code in a video game because he was like a Canadian that just found out he was Canadian before he goes to the CFL draft. The Stampeders get him at number six in the first round, and he comes in and immediately, midway through his first season, just learning the game, becomes a starting middle linebacker for this team and never looked back. And you know, he has been the heartbeat of this defense, and I think not only the reason why I say he's a bit of a cheat code, because a very good player, and B, was a huge part of that ratio. And I think the biggest key for teams and why the Stampeders have been so successful, they've always had a strong Canadian contingent. So I think that's going to be a kind of a twofold there, Matt. A, replacing his talent on the field, and B, that's a big hole as a Canadian starter.
Yeah, I'm going to lean to Alex Singleton as well, because I mentioned just a moment ago, Brent Monson did a lot helping that defense get its identity even when Devon Claybrooks was here. So I think that transition already has gone exceptionally smooth for the Calgary Stampeders. Right now it's looking like Corey Greenwood, who's, you know, up there in his career. He's had a torn ACL in 2017, so he's recovering from an injury. You don't know what type of workload he'll be able to handle over the course of a full year. He is a Canadian, like Alex Singleton, but this is a guy who's coming in with a little bit of a different pedigree. This is a guy who has a little bit more questions around him as far as playing an entire season. And then after that, they don't necessarily have a Canadian who will have the same impact that a Greenwood or a Singleton would behind him, a Riley Jones or an Eric Meslaria, if something does happen to Greenwood. So the idea seems to be they're going to try and play a Canadian at that middle linebacker spot nevertheless, but I think that replacing Alex Singleton is without a doubt going to be one of the biggest challenges for this team as the season gets going.
In a league known for offense, people are generally more familiar with offensive names. And while we know Bo Levi Mitchell and Eric Rogers and some of the others, Kamar Jordan over the years, who have done big things offensively for this team, for my money, the reason they've been in three straight Grey Cups is the defense. Does that need to shift this season? Does Calgary need to be more of an offensive juggernaut as it cannot rely on its defense as it has in previous years because of what you guys just mentioned?
I don't know if they'll have to rely on the offense. I think that, you know, this isn't going to be a team that lives or dies by one phase of the game. This is going to be a team that's going to be kind of, they're going to need both phases to be having success if they want to contend in this really tough Western Division. And as much as you kind of look at the weapons that they have, the guys that they've lost, I think they'll be able to produce because they still do have Bo Levi Mitchell, for my money, is the best quarterback in this league. But at the same time, I don't know if it's a worry is in the sense that, hey, we're going to have to outscore the amount of points that the defense allows. I think that they're still expecting this to be a stout defensive team, one of the best in the league.
And Scotty, for me, it's kind of a bit of both, because I don't know if this is a Stampeder team that's been as strong as years past, where, you know, you look at the fourth quarter, and I know that everyone says the CFL game, it's like, it's never over till it's over. But the Stampeders historically have been allowed to, you know, take Bo off the field or take certain starters off the field because the game is essentially in hand, and part of that is their defense. And, you know, their offense is on the field for so long with such long drives, and then the energy levels are just so off balance for both teams. So I think the biggest difference for this team this year is they're not going to be able to have fourth quarter leads like they've had in years past. I think games of this season for the Stampeders will go more down to the wire than years past, and that's when I think you rely on both sides of that ball.
And just one note for me on that, I think that for this team, getting a little bit younger this year, being able to kind of keep going all throughout the game and into that fourth quarter, I think that they'll be able to kind of handle that moving forward.
That's Matt Rose and Will Nault in Calgary. This is the CFL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Scott Rintoul in Vancouver. And as we alluded to, Devon Claybrook's one of the big changes out here in BC. In fact, no team made more notable name brand changes to its roster than the BC Lions. Mike Riley's the headliner. He's arguably the best quarterback in the league. Claybrook's at head coach. Jerron Carter, Aaron Grimes, the list goes on and on. The Lions on paper, fellas, look very good. What is the biggest obstacle to making that all work?
I think it's just maybe taking that step, because it feels like the last 3 or 4 years, Scotty, when we're doing this show, it's always the sexy pick is the BC Lions. And, you know, everyone was talking last year about Jonathan Jennings. Can he build off of that momentum? You know, everyone thought that the BC Lions in the final year for Wally Buono, this is going to be it, win it for Wally. This year, it's different. Obviously, they're a stronger team on paper than they have been in years past, but again, they're the sexy pick for a lot of people. And I think for it all to come together, it's all on their offensive side of the football, because, you know, you bring in a guy who in Jerron Carter, who is an unbelievable talent, but we also know what he is off the field. And you know, he's never played with a quarterback of the talent of Mike Riley. So is that maybe finally the pairing he needs to show his talent? And I think if he wasn't such a head case, he'd be a guy that would be south of the border in the NFL. So I think if he can finally get things on track on the field, that dynamic duo he could form with Brian Burnham would be so dangerous on the offensive side of the football. And for me, you know, I think they lose a franchise guy in Elamilian, but, you know, you bring in Devon Claybrooks. They've got a couple of things shifting on the defensive side of the football. You know, they bring in Malik Harris from Stampeders, who was a backup special teams guy, but maybe he can emerge and be a guy that can start for the BC Lions, because he is very familiar, obviously, with Claybrooks and what he wants. And then, you know, Jordan Herdman-Reed, who last year started to emerge as maybe a star on this defense. And as a Canadian, would obviously, Matt, help with that ratio on the BC Lions. So there's a lot at work here. The thing that I always caution, because I do think on paper they look amazing, they've brought in a lot of pieces. Yeah. How do they make it all work? And sometimes we see with all that turnover, it takes a little while to get going.
With the Lions, I have less questions about the offense than I have with the defense. I think that Daron Carter is going to have a good season under a guy like Devon Claybrooks, who isn't the type of coach to try and put a square peg in a round hole. He's going to let Daron Carter do his thing, and as a result, I think he's going to have a successful season. Not have to worry about maybe the off-field stuff as much. Mike Riley's an excellent quarterback. You mentioned Burnham. It's an excellent 1-2 tandem. Lamar Durant's a good player. He didn't have a great season last year. Named the most outstanding Canadian in the Grey Cup. He had a pretty good game there. That's an addition for them. And I think one of the more underrated additions, too, is Suk Chung in the interior of that offensive line, who will add a little bit more protection for Mike Riley as he gets used to some of the nuances of this new offense.
And he's also Canadian, so there you go.
Yeah, that helps as well. The defense intrigues me because you bring in a guy like Grimes, who has been outstanding. Him and Lee provide maybe one of the best halfback tandems in the league on the defensive side of the ball. The defense, you bring back a couple returning guys at the tackle position. You know what you're going to get out of Odell Willis.
Are you, though?
Well,
so far he's beating out Father Time. 34 years old, 11 sacks last year. I'm not saying it's going to fall off a cliff, but is it too much to ask for a repeat season like that?
Well, I think that for me, the Lions defense isn't necessarily going to rest on that defensive line as much as it's going to be. What's Herdman Reed going to bring? He was outstanding last year as he was forced into action due to injury. Can he take another big step forward? Can Malik Harris take on a starting role? Because as you mentioned, he was here in Calgary, he was mostly a backup behind Jameer Thurman, but he was also a guy who the team always talked about having a pretty big impact and being able to play. When you ask the coaching staff here in Calgary about losing linebackers, they go, yeah, we lost three good ones, Singleton, Thurman, and Harris. It's not just the two big ones. So he's a good player as well. The question is, can it all come together? And I think they got great defensive coordinator. I think that's pretty easy to say when you bring in Stubler. So there's some questions around this BC team. I'm interested to see how fast the defense can come together because we talk a lot about communication and that type of things on the defense. And with all these guys coming together, if they can kind of get on a roll early and bond together, I think it'll be okay.
Here's the other part of the equation that we haven't really talked about. Claybrooks is a rookie head coach, but look at all the coaches he surrounded himself with. Rich Stubler is the exception. This is the youngest coaching staff in the CFL this year. Nick Lewis, Ryan Phillips, Jarius Jackson. Two of those three guys haven't been in the capacities they are before, and you can go down the list. There's a lot of ex-players they brought here. They didn't mind going young. Is that worrisome if you're a BC Lions fan that they have the youngest coaching staff in the league?
I think it's worrisome, but I think you can also look at the evidence in Calgary because I think Claybrooks is trying to implement the same type of system in Calgary. You look at Josh Bell. You look at even Claybrooks himself. You look at Corey Mace. All these former players just step right into coaching roles.
I think...
He's trying to build that same type of atmosphere, same type of culture with the BC Lions. Will it work right away in year one? I don't know. But I certainly think that's something that he's trying to build, and only time will tell how successful that'll be.
And I think it is a little bit different in BC with Devon Claybrooks kind of leading the ship compared to Dave Dickinson. Two very different kind of personalities for sure. But I agree. I think that Devon is kind of trying to install that culture where he wants people to enjoy coming to work, enjoy doing their job. And if you take care of those two things, the on-field product will take care of itself.
Well, my biggest question about that offense is whether or not John White gets back to being John White, who was arguably the best running back in the CFL a couple of years ago, and whether one of those young Canadians, Lamar Durant or Shaq Johnson, becomes a star in this league with Mike Riley at the helm. Because we know this from Edmonton. He is a star maker. He has sent player after player to the NFL when they are in his passing game. Can he do the same in BC? We'll find out this year. Speaking of Edmonton, it's Ottawa West now all of a sudden. They've got the old assistant GM who's the GM who hired the old offensive coordinator who's now the head coach. Then they bring in the quarterback, the receiver. They've got Jason Moss. They've got Trevor Harris. They've got Greg Ellingson back together. Do you guys see enough talent on that offense to overcome questions about that defense?
For me, this is very much like BC. These two teams went out and they added a whole bunch of talent in free agency. But the question always is, in big team sports like this, especially one like football, where you have so many players on the field at once, communication is such a key thing. How quickly can they come together and really kind of gel and get that identity? The offense, you look at it, it's star-studded for sure. Obviously, losing Vincent Rogers early to the torn tricep hurts them on the offensive line, but nevertheless, they brought in a lot of talent. Collins, Daniels, a couple really good receivers. Harris, I'm interested to see how quickly he kind of gets used to Edmonton. You mentioned Moss and Sunderland, some old kind of management and coaching staff that he's worked with prior. I think it'll be able to work together, and that offense will kind of take care of itself. But I'm interested to see how some of these free agents that they brought in on the defense, the entire linebacking core, Anthony Orange, how all of these guys fit together. I think the defensive line will be just fine. You got Bazzi and Boateng and Sewell. Those guys will do their job. But the question remains, what's going to happen behind them?
To answer your original question, Scott, I do think the offense has enough talent to overshadow the defense a little bit. Ellingson, obviously, we know what he does with Harris. That's a huge, huge addition. And good on Trevor Harris for being able to recruit him from Ottawa. But that's the receiving core to me is the big question mark. On paper, it looks good. But when you lose, you think about it, since 2016, four guys who have led the Eskimos in receiving is Adarius Bowman, Brandon Zylstra, Duke Williams, and Darrell Walker. All four no longer with the organization. So, you know, how do they make up for that production? I'm not sure. C.J. Gable, we saw he was a huge addition late last season. When he got acquired from the Eskimos, they lost like two games. One of them was in the playoffs, obviously. One of them to the Stampeders late in the year. So I think they've got enough talent. I just wonder if Trevor Harris can continue to do what he's doing. And I thought last year he built some huge steps in Ottawa, and I thought he was going to stay in Ottawa. So that was huge. And good on the Eskimos for replacing Riley, because if they weren't able to do that, well, then all of a sudden you've got so many questions with the Eskimos. And on the defensive side, the two obviously huge free agent additions are Larry Dean and Santos Knox, who should help with that linebacking core. But, I think they've got enough talent. What about you, Scott?
Yeah, I do see the potential for the talent there. I wonder about the defensive side of the ball. The other thing I wonder about in Edmonton is the offensive line. Losing Sir Vincent Rogers, as Matt pointed out, is a huge loss for that team early in the season. Matt O'Donnell, is he going to be the guy that steadies that offensive line? I know he's not playing at one of the tackle positions necessarily, but that is a big, big player for them that can certainly make Trevor Harris's life easier. The other question I have, and you listed all those receivers that have done so well, there's always that X factor receiver in Edmonton, the guy that Mike Riley has made a star. Is that going to be Davaris Daniels this year and coming over from Calgary, or could it be the young Canadian Tavon Smith? 2016 draft pick, has been in the NFL. Now they've got him here north of the border. There's a lot of hype surrounding his name. It didn't work out with Nate Behar, who they took near the top of the draft a couple of years ago. Can Tavon Smith be a guy who puts that offense to the next level?
The problem for me is sometimes with these Canadian guys, when you see a roster like this, is they can tend to get lost in the shuffle. Could he have a breakout year? Yes. But at the same time, when you look around at this receiving group with Ellison and Daniels and Collins, hitting 1,000 yards might be tough, because we could see Trevor Harris move the ball around quite a bit. I think he's poised for a breakout season. He could be one of those guys that kind of comes out of the woodwork and has an outstanding season and, you know, gets in that most outstanding Canadian talk like we had with Greg Ellingson last year. But at the same time, I would temper expectations just with how much talent they have in this group. He's not going to be the only target for Trevor Harris.
Now, it worked well in Ottawa that way. They spread it around. Sinopoli was great. Ellingson was great. They've had a variety of flankers that worked out as well. But your point is well made. There's only one football, and Ellingson is going to be the guy who gets the majority of the targets. The good news for the other guys, that means you get single coverage a lot of times. You beat your man, you get the rock, you make big yards. On to Winnipeg. We'll leave Saskatchewan for last, because the Winnipeg Blue Bombers took a step last season. And you want to talk about some big-name additions in the offseason. Willie Jefferson is about as big as they get on the defensive side of the ball. Does that look like the best defense right now in the Canadian Football League?
I don't see how it couldn't be. Adam Big Hill, obviously, last year was a career year, over 100 tackles. Jefferson, as you mentioned, 10 sacks. He now adds that absolutely terrifying duo on the other side with Jackson Jeffcoat. So I think they are the best defense in the CFL. Their secondary is outstanding. I think their front seven is the best in the league, no question. And I think if they can continue to build off of what they did last year, because I agree 100%, they took a massive step, and they really pushed the Stampeders in the West Finals. So I love their defense, Matt. And I think, to me, this is a huge, huge year for them, because they have to take that next step now into Grey Cup territory or Grey Cup contending territory. And I think their defense is good enough to do that.
You have probably the nastiest duo at defensive end between Jackson Jeffcoat and Willie Jefferson. That's going to be an absolute headache for teams all season long. Big Hill helps with the middle of that defensive line as well. Maybe not as heralded as the guys they have on the defensive end, but Adam Big Hill coming off a most outstanding defensive player or last year. Their defense is really good. Alexander and Sales at the halfback position, a couple of young guys who had really good seasons and are just set to keep getting even better. Rose is an outstanding quarter. They've got it all. They've got a lot of kind of returning guys too, which is the biggest thing here, especially in the West. Look at continuity, and the Blue Bombers have quite a bit of continuity in a league.
Probably the most in the division.
Probably the most in the division, and you might even make the argument in the league, because with, 75% of the players were free agents at the end of last season. So I think some of the teams that were able to, you know, hold on to some of their guys and keep some continuity, I think that could go a long way, especially early on in the season.
They've got an excellent receiving core as well. Darvin Adams. They added Chris Matthews, who's now back in the CFL full-time. Calgary certainly knows him well from the Grey Cup run, but now he's back in Winnipeg where he first made a name for himself. Nick Dembski is still there. They've got some really nice options that have shown speed here in the preseason. Andrew Harris is still in the backfield. The question to me remains at quarterback. Yes, Matt Nichols is the guy coming into this season, but we saw what Chris Streveler did last year. He is the more athletic quarterback. He is the younger quarterback. By season's end, who is the starting quarterback in Winnipeg?
I still think it's Nichols. Otherwise, I think they're in trouble. But you're right. I think Streveler is going to be an interesting guy to watch because I think, too, we can see maybe a couple of different series or different looks that we started to see late last season with Streveler. We saw it here in Calgary, you know, where he lines up in short yardage, fakes, takes three steps back, and throws an absolute bomb, 60 yards, touchdown. So I think they can get really creative. But Matt, to me, if Nichols is not their guy by week 14-15, I think they've got some questions because I do think Streveler's more athletic. I think Nichols is a better quarterback, though.
Yeah, I think that Matt Nichols gives you kind of the veteran, the true quarterback style of quarterback. And I'm really interested to see what Mike O'Shea kind of cooked up in the offseason to have those two offset each other, because especially you mentioned the Blue Bombers game here at McMahon last year where we saw Chris Streveler kind of come in every third series, and it was just an offset from what they would typically do with Nichols, and it was giving the defense fits because they would have to kind of completely change how they were going about trying to handle this offense for Winnipeg. It's really like a two-headed monster. It gives them a really interesting look. I do think that Matt Nichols is going to be the starter when the end of the season comes around, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Chris Streveler play in almost every game as kind of a feature back, because he just gives such a different look to that Winnipeg offense, and it was a look that had success last year.
Well, for me, Dave Dickinson is the best play caller in this league, but Paul LaPolice is second in that category, and it's not by a whole lot. Paul LaPolice is the type of guy who can use two quarterbacks. As you guys pointed out, he did a lot last year. I do wonder if by the season's end, Streveler gives him more options with that offense. But if the defense is the backbone of this team, they can afford to play some of that short dink and dunk with Matt Nichols. He's not a guy that opens it up all the time, but he's got enough weapons around them. If he gets them the ball in the open field, they should be able to score a decent amount of points. That leaves us with Saskatchewan in the West, and not a team that you generally leave for last, but this is a team that lost its head coach. It's had an overhaul of talent to a certain degree. It's BC Lions East to a certain degree now with Solomon Elamimi and Manny Arsenault showing up. Deshaun Davis is there as well. What do we expect from the Saskatchewan Roughriders this season? Are they clearly the fifth best team in the West, or do we know?
I don't know if we know, but for me, they're fifth, because I think all eyes are on Zach Caleros. I know he played a good game this week in the preseason against the Bombers, but they've never been an offense that can stretch the field. And I think in the CFL, the last couple of years, they haven't been able to do enough to help their really good defense. And I know they've lost some pieces on defense. They lost Chris Jones, as you mentioned. But this is, to me, all about how far can Zach Caleros take the Saskatchewan Roughriders. And because there's so many questions around him and his health, I think that's why they are fifth in the league. They brought in William Powell, which I think is a huge addition to this offense, because he can help Caleros in that department. And maybe if he can, you know, have a lot of chunk yardage on first down, that would obviously put Caleros and that offense in a better spot, because they are a dink and duck type team. And, you know, Manny Arsenault comes back. How much tread is left on those tires? I don't know. Roosevelt has been good, but he's also been battling injuries the last 3 years. There's a lot of question marks on offense. If they can get it together, they're a good team. But because of all the questions surrounding the most important position in this league, that to me is why they're fifth in the league, in that division, sorry, especially with all the talent that is now filled the West division in this league.
Yeah, you look at the West, especially on offense and at quarterback, I think there's definitely some he's lower on that rung for the five quarterbacks in the West for sure. And you look at their receivers, and you mentioned Roosevelt, the guy who's proven himself in the league, who's gone through some injury issues. But then apart from that, it's a bunch of guys who they've kind of brought in. They signed Manny Arsenault. They signed Corey Watson. They got one of the better global players out of the draft in Zimmerman, this German receiver who seems to be a player. They spent their first two draft picks this summer on receivers, and Justin McInnes and Braden Lenius, two guys who are 6'5 and 6'6. So there's a lot of moving parts on this offense. The offensive line didn't change too much, which is a good sign. They allowed a league-low 27 sacks, tied with the Stampeders last year, which is a good thing for Zach Kolaros. Staying healthy for him is going to be key, and not just staying healthy, but making sure that he is one of the better quarterbacks in this league. You mentioned Powell. I think that's a huge addition, not because it helps on first down, getting that chunk yardage, but he's great in protection as well, which also helps with Kolaros staying up, staying healthy. And I think this team is going to live or die on that. I think that their defense will be able to get them some stops. That defensive line is pretty terrifying, and it will be for at least the first half of the season because it does have some aging veterans.
Yeah, lost Jefferson, but brought in Micah Johnson, obviously. And you know, we know what Charleston Hughes does here in Calgary. Yeah. So, yeah.
So there's some questions on the defense for sure. But at the same time, this team, the way I look at it, they'll live and die by how that offense handles itself, led by Zach Kolaros.
Well, that's one of the bigger questions for me. You guys mentioned Charleston Hughes. We know what he does. How much tread is left on those tires? The same question we asked about Odell Willis earlier. Same with Solomon Elamimian. We know how good he is. This is a most outstanding player in the Canadian Football League, let alone a two-time most outstanding defensive player. What does he have left? Because you're right. With some kinks to work out in the offense, depending on how Zach Kolaros plays, that defense could be on the field a decent amount and give Craig Dickinson a lot of challenges to work with in his first season as head coach. Still plenty more to come here on the CFL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Will Nault, Matt Rose in Calgary, Scott Rintoul in Vancouver. We're going to shift things over to the East next. Pretty clear who sits at the top of the East. Is there anyone who can challenge the throne of the Hamilton Ticats heading into this season? We'll kick that around next, right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to the CFL Preview Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the CFL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Scott Rintoul in Vancouver, Will Nault and Matt Rose in Calgary. And while we spent the bulk of our time thus far talking about everything happening in the West, the East still has some interesting storylines, perhaps not as many as we have here on this side of the country. That's often the case with the CFL. We all know where it begins in the East, fellas. It's the Hamilton Ticats. Everybody knows how talent-laden they are. What is your biggest question mark about the Hamilton Ticats heading into this season, albeit with a new head coach in Orlando Steinauer?
Maybe not fair, but I honestly wonder, what does Jeremiah Masoli look like without June Jones? Because June Jones left, obviously, late in the year for the XFL. Masoli really exploded last year and showed that he can be a franchise quarterback. But we also know that June Jones is a bit of a quarterback whisperer. I've always been kind of a little bit of a doubter, maybe unfairly, on Masoli because he still, to me, makes too many mistakes. He throws a lot of interceptions, but we also know there's a lot of athleticism there, and he showed last year that he can be a guy to lead this team. And obviously, the benefit he's got is his division is not as strong as the West. But, Matt, that's all eyes for me because it is no question. They are the best team on paper by a mile in the East Division. Can Masoli have the same success? Can he lead this team to the next level? Because I think he's got to eliminate some of those mistakes, and if he can do that, he can be elite in this league. And that offense has got a ton of talent. Brandon Banks, obviously, is one of the elite talents in this league with his speed alone. And, you know, this is a team that has a ton of talent on paper. How do you put it together? And all eyes on the most important position in this league, at quarterback.
Yep, I'd have to agree, because if you look at the defense, they basically kept a bunch of good players, and then they added a few good players as well. Jagarrad Davis completes that defensive line with Ted Laron. Their defensive backs have pretty much all came back. They added Tunde Adeleke, who had some success here in Calgary. Simone Lawrence is back. A little bit of question at linebacker, but it's hard to not look at the offense and go, can this team really, you know, go on the backs of Jeremiah Masoli? And I think he's going to be a great player this year. I think he's poised to maybe even get in that most outstanding player talk. They've got three really good receivers in Saunders, Banks, and they have Tasker there as well, who, depending on who you talk to, many think he's one of the most underrated receivers in this league. The big question for me, too, with them is at running back, because they got the Canadian and Thomas Erlington. They got Cam Marshall, who's a veteran there as well. But can they get some help from the running game? Because I think Masoli will be okay through the air with that group of receivers and pretty much a returning line as well.
At least they have a known commodity in the offensive coordinator with Tommy Condell still being there, and a guy who has had success in this league before after sort of the weird departure under Kent Austin. Tommy Condell is a guy who can really help this out with June Jones leaving. Orlando Steinauer is the next head coach. That's the guy that everybody thought would be the next one on the list, and really the guy they made room for in Hamilton. Do you have any question about his perhaps hot seat or the amount of pressure he has on him in Hamilton as a first-year guy with this much talent and this much expectation to win?
I think we're going to toss it around a little later as far as which one of these rookie coaches is under the most pressure, but I think that there's definitely some here in Hamilton for Steinauer, because as we've talked about basically this entire segment, when you look at these teams on paper, Hamilton's has the best. They have the best opportunity out of all the teams in the East to go to the Grey Cup, and we saw just a couple years ago, you don't have to be the best team in the league. As long as you make it to the Grey Cup, you can still win it when the Argos beat the Stampeders just two seasons ago. So he's definitely got some pressure on him. He's stepping into a new role on a team that definitely has some high expectations.
I think the thing that will help him is the familiarity, because he has been around the Hamilton team for a little while. But I think the pressure is there, probably bigger than any other rookie coach outside of Dickinson, who obviously lives in the province where they live and die by football in this country. So he's got a lot of pressure, but I think he can handle it. He's been a guy who has been groomed for this. He reminds me a lot, Scott, of Dave Dickinson, because his name has been out there for a long, long time. The organization has done everything they can to protect him, and now it's his time to show what he can do as head coach. And I think he'll be all right. I really do.
A lot of us, and certainly myself included, would like the CFL to be a conference format, not go with the divisions. As much as the tradition is great, there's been such an imbalance in the league west to east over the last number of years. If we were to put the Hamilton Ticats into the West right now, where would you put them? Are they as good as Calgary, or are they as good as BC? Are they at the top? Where do they rank compared to what we consider the best teams in the CFL?
I think they have one of...
It's a great question.
It's a great question. I think they have one of, if not the best defense in the league when you look at it on paper. And I mentioned continuity earlier in the show. I think that's going to be a big thing this year, and they definitely have some continuity on that defense and on the offense. I think they'd be right up there with some of the best teams in the West. You look at Calgary, BC, Edmonton. I think they'd be right up there. And I think probably right in the middle. It's tough, though.
I think they would be number three for me behind Calgary and Winnipeg.
Yeah, I'd probably go around the same there. And then movement in BC and Edmonton would caution me to put them a little bit behind.
That's going to be really interesting to see where the Hamilton Ticats shake out. Strange that your litmus test would come in playing games against the other division as opposed to your own, but it is so top-heavy in the East that it's hard to figure out which team has any chance of challenging them. We could go to Toronto, we could go to Ottawa, but how about we stick in Southern Ontario for right now and go with the Toronto Argonauts? Corey Chamberlain is back coaching. They do have experience in Jacques Chaplin, who's been a head coach, offensive coordinator forever in this league. They've added a nice piece, certainly, in Darrell Walker, who is one of the stars in the receiving core in this league. Is there enough in Toronto to make them any type of threat in the East?
I think that there's definitely a little bit of hesitation just because the quarterback position, and that's kind of my feeling on basically all the teams in the East except for Hamilton. the talent is there around him. The offensive line was pretty good last year, and they kept a lot of guys, too. They cut Van Ziel. They drafted Richards with the first overall pick. You mentioned Walker. They have Wilder there. SJ Green can still produce, but the question is at quarterback, and can they get some consistency from that position? Because we all know in the offseason they took a big run at Bo Levi Mitchell, and that would have helped a lot of problems, but now you're here and you're looking at Franklin and Bethel Thompson and Bridge, and I have questions about what will happen at quarterback in Toronto.
And their defense isn't one that like really scares you either on paper, so that kind of worries you. And you know, I think it's a team that's probably going to be battling with Montreal for the basement. I've got Ottawa as my second best team in the East, but you know, I just think there's too many questions there. They've got so much talent at running back. It'd be nice if they could spread some of that out, because they're gonna, you know, I saw Corey Chamberlain quoted this week. He wants to keep all his running backs because he's got so much talent there, and maybe they can spread Wilder Jr. out and play him at slot or whatever the case may be. But you're right. With Bethel Thompson there, he didn't really impress me at all last year when he got an extended look when Ricky Ray went down. There's been a ton of question about Franklin. They brought him in, obviously. It didn't work, and that's why Bethel Thompson ended up getting so many looks. And then Brandon Bridge, we saw he's just so erratic. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. Hasn't been known anyways to be a great practice player. Can't put it all together. There's just too many questions here for me, Scott, to really look at them as a huge threat to Hamilton.
Yeah, James Franklin's the interesting one here for me. They've named him the starter. Mike Riley apparently called him when they found out that Chapdelaine was going to Toronto and said, you're going to like this. He's going to let you be you and utilize your strengths. If he lives up to the potential he showed in Edmonton, now all of a sudden the Argos may have something. I'll disagree with you guys a little bit on the defensive side of the ball. It's all about whether these guys get to a place they've been before or at least flashed before. Yeah. They've still got Cleon Lang. Sean Lemon is a guy who can get off the edge, and despite what you might think of him as an every down player, he's going to get after the quarterback. Abdul Kane, can he get back to the level we've seen him at before? Ian Wild, does he realize his potential? Kevin Fogg has flashed at times. They've got some names. Does it all come together on the defensive side of the ball for the Argos? Because it has the potential to actually be a pretty decent unit.
Yeah, and they bring in Toby Antigua and Micah Oz, some guys who kind of waiting for that starting opportunity as well. I think there's definitely potential here, but you mentioned kind of you need guys to do something that they've done in past years, and can they do it once again? I think there's lots of potential on this defense, but is it a sure bet? I'm less certain.
Very similar quarterback situation, if you will, in Ottawa, where you have a couple of players who have had good runs at times, but they haven't shown it consistently. The Red Blacks decide they will go with Dominique Davis to start the season. It will not, in fact, be Jonathan Jennings, the former BC pivot. He will be the backup to begin the year. Right choice from where you guys sit?
I think so. And you know, all due respect to Jonathan Jennings, I think he is pretty much ran his course as a starter in this league. I think there's been questions about what he can do in terms of reading defenses. And now that he's lost this job to Davis, well, that just tells you where maybe he's fallen in terms of some of the rankings as a quarterback in this league. And Dominique Davis was there last year, backup to Trevor Harris, so obviously that helps him a little bit. I know they like his athleticism a ton. Didn't play in both preseason games, so clearly they're very confident in his abilities, Matt. Now can you put it all together? They bring in, you know, Nate Behard, Sinopoli's still there. They've got some weapons, but they don't have Powell, who they lost, as we mentioned early in the show, to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. They don't have as many weapons as they did in years past, and maybe that's a disservice to Davis, but I think with his athleticism, his arm, and the fact he was there last year, those are all things I think are going to help him as he starts to get, you know, acclimated to being a CFL starting quarterback.
I'm interested to see what happens with this Ottawa offense, because they've got four basically stud Canadians on the offensive line, which will allow them a little bit of flexibility, maybe to play an extra American at receiver in one of those skilled positions. And maybe we see a player who's having a rookie season with the Red Blacks end up being the rookie of the year. Maybe one of their receivers who we haven't necessarily heard a ton about comes out of the States and just takes advantage of an opportunity in Ottawa, because the weapons that were there for Trevor Harris last year are no longer there to the same extent. But there's a lot of guys who have had some success down in the States who maybe if they have an opportunity could succeed. And I think that the offensive line being able to give them some ratio flexibility across the roster is a big thing for me when I look at this Red Blacks offense.
We can talk about all of the players who left, and you're right, Trevor Harris, Ellingson, we can go down the list. There's a lot of star players in this league who are no longer Ottawa Red Blacks. Maybe their biggest subtraction, their biggest loss, was their offensive coordinator. Jamie Elizondo left this team relatively close to the season, and he had been a noted positive play caller in this league. He's part of the reason that Trevor Harris was able to take that next step. That's my question with the Ottawa Red Blacks, what they're able to do offensively, how their play calling goes. Defensively, they have as good a coaching staff as you are going to find. Rick Campbell is excellent defensively. Noel Thorpe has been a great defensive coordinator in this league. Mark Nelson is their linebackers coach. They're stacked coaching-wise on that side of the ball. But how does that offensive coaching staff come together with two quarterbacks who don't have a great deal of experience in that offense?
It's a great point on the coordinator because we've seen it before. It doesn't matter where you are or how good your personnel is. When you lose somebody that close to training camp or that close to the season, it throws everything off. And I know it's tough to compare sport to sport. We've seen it in hockey with Patrick Waugh and the Avalanche. We've seen it in different areas in the NFL, in baseball, whatever the case may be. When you lose somebody who's that important and who is that good of a play caller, I think it throws everything off. So that's a great point by you, Scott, because that's not easy to pick things up because now you've all of a sudden got to learn a whole new playbook and you're running out of time. So I think you might see a little bit of rust early on in the season because they've lost the coordinator that close to the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see them maybe stumble a little bit out of the gate just with even the guys who are back there. He lost a bunch of leaders on offense, and that's another offense that I look at it like BC and I look at it like Edmonton. What is going to happen with all of these moving parts? Are you guys going to be able to get some tread early on?
Well, we talk a lot about potential in this league. RJ Harris is a guy who made a name for himself last year. They've got pieces on that offense that look attractive, but with new offensive coordinator, new play calling, maybe a new philosophy to a certain degree in Ottawa, does any of it come together? You said you had them ranked as the number two team in the East right now. Will, how about you, Matt? Where do you have the Ottawa Red Blacks as we head into this season?
They're definitely behind the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I think that because they maybe have a little bit more talent on the offense, I'd probably put them second as well. And I just don't know what's going to happen with Montreal. They're a wild card. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they come out of the East as a surprise team and finish in second. But right now, being just a sure bet, I'd probably say Ottawa second, then Toronto, and then Montreal.
Well, that is an interesting point for me, that Montreal could be viewed as the second-place team in the East. I think most people have the Alouettes, who still don't have their ownership situation settled and don't really know what their quarterback situation is going to play out as this season, as the least of the East. Is that where you see them right now, Will? Is there any reason to think that the Montreal Alouettes can contend for a playoff spot in the East?
No, I honestly don't see it at all. And, you know, we've seen the struggles Mike Sherman's had as a first-year coach last year. They've got all kinds of questions at quarterback. I know Pipkin played a handful of games last year and looked okay. Vernon Adams has never really been able to put it all together, and he's been looked at as potentially a future star in this league, but it just hasn't come together. I think it's his third turn in Montreal. So there's just so many questions here. They don't have a ton of talent on paper. They bring in Devier Posey, who, you know, we've seen a couple of years ago, had a great game in the Great Cup with the Argonauts last year, the tail end of the year, finished with the BC Lions. He's a big play threat, but the problem is there someone to get him the football? And then you look at the defensive side of things. Henok Mwamba, obviously, up the middle is huge, but Bowman's, you know, pushing father time like it's you've never seen it before, and you're wondering when that's ever going to run out. They've got some nice pieces. They obviously bring in Siante Evans from Calgary. They've got Tommy Campbell, who's an elite corner in this league. They've got some nice pieces on defense, but there's just too many holes on this roster. I don't see them being a threat whatsoever. Are they going to be as bad as last year? I hope not, but this certainly does not lead me anything to look at as promising on paper with this club.
The thing for me
the other addition, sorry, Matt, but the other addition on that defense is Taylor Loeffler. So you're right. Down the middle of that defense, they could be nasty, and they have added some name pieces on that side of the ball.
Yeah, Taylor Loeffler is a big one at safety. Tommy Campbell returns. He's an outstanding shutdown corner. They got Siante Evans in free agency. Marcus Cromartie, a former NFL defensive back, is theirs too. Pat Levels was good here in Calgary. They got two good Canadian linebackers in Lacombo and Mwamba. But then you look at the offense and you go, oh boy, this offense, the line is not great. Questions at quarterback. They've got some guys who have had some success at receiver, and Stanback has some potential as a young running back in this league for sure. But the organization is a gong show. If things do come together, then maybe they do. But at the same time, enjoy with optimism, but also use caution.
How did it get this bad this quickly in Montreal? Just kicking it around yesterday with a couple of people. Montreal was the gold standard in this league. They were either going to be in the Grey Cup, winning the Grey Cup, or right there every single year. Is it as simple as losing Anthony Calvillo? Is it as simple as that? Or is there a lot more at play in Montreal with how quickly this has devolved?
Oh, man. I try to ask myself this question all the time because I like to think it's more than Calvillo, but I also don't know because this is a team that never really set themselves up with a plan B. They knew Calvillo was leaving. This guy wasn't going to play until he was 60. And yet they did nothing to have kind of a plan B. And we talk so much about how crucial the quarterback position is in this league. And forever, they were never looking at what is the future. When Calvillo leaves, what are we going to do? And they never had that question. And I think that soured the fan base. There's been obviously a huge decline in attendance. Off the field with ownership, as we've talked about, that's been something that has been a huge concern. You know, this is so weird because you're right. As a kid growing up, it was always Montreal in the Grey Cup game. You know, you look at Ben Cahoon, you look at Anthony Calvillo, you look at even a guy like Pringle, who was an outstanding running back forever in this league, and they were always a team that everyone was trying to build like. And now they're looked at as a complete gong show, as you talked about, Matt, and there's just so many questions with this team outside of the on-field product. I think it's deeper than Calvillo, Scotty, but I think it starts there without question.
Definitely started there, and then it was just misstep after misstep. The Johnny Manziel trade, probably the most recent of them, but not drafting well, signing players to strange contracts, bringing in guys that maybe don't fit the culture. The coaching has been a bit of a carousel. Like, there just hasn't been a lot of positive things to happen on field or off the field in Montreal since Anthony Calvillo left. And you can say that was the start of it, but really this has just been, you know, a bunch of little cuts on the back that has led to this organization being the cream of the crop to where they are now.
It's funny you mentioned the Manziel trade. That might be the worst trade in the last 10 years in the CFL.
I was looking over at the draft today, and Montreal didn't pick in the first round this past draft because that pick was gone. Hamilton went back-to-back, took an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman. Two things that Montreal probably would have liked to have.
What about you, Scott? Well,
we got Ricky Ray on line, too. He thinks that there's been a worse trade in the league in the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah, good point.
That one's in the conversation. I'll tell you what, for me, and I know the three of us aren't that close to it in Montreal, but from this far away, it's very clear there has not been a clear plan. They have tried to appease everybody at every turn, and by doing so, they have not had any sort of streamlined plan with their organization. Oh, we got to have a coach that's bilingual so we can get the fans out, and that'll help. No, we got to bring in Johnny Manziel. The Flash will sell. Maybe we'll be a defensive team. They just haven't had any sort of plan from season to season, from month to month, it seemed, in the league. And until they get ownership that has a plan from the top on down and they are able to hire that way, I just don't think it's getting better anytime soon in Montreal.
Well, and you mentioned two things there that were kind of moves by the team that really were more like, hey, we'll sell tickets than, hey, this will improve our product on the field. This will improve our team as a whole. Put a good team on the field, put a good coaching staff around them, win some football games, and people will come out and watch team. But right now, it's a gong show. No one wants to watch this team just get smoked by every team that comes into Montreal. You fix that, and then maybe people will start going to watch games.
Willie, you said it earlier. I hope they are better than they were last year. It's for the betterment of the league if Montreal can at least be competitive this season. Will Naughton, Matt Rose in Calgary, Scott Rintoul in Vancouver. Our CFL preview show on the Sportsnet Radio Network continues next. We'll kick around some of the big questions heading into this season overall, including the most underrated signing of this offseason. There are plenty to choose from. You've got it on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the CFL Preview Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the CFL Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Scott Rintoul in Vancouver, Will Naught and Matt Rose in Calgary. We've broken down both divisions in the first hour, and now we start to cast our net over the course of the entire CFL and see which names come up after what was a very busy offseason. In fact, guys, that was the story of the offseason to me outside of the business that needed to be done, which was getting a new CBA, something they got done just in time for training camp. The number of big-name players that changed hands or at least considered changing hands, was that the theme of the offseason for you guys as well?
The theme in Calgary was Bo Levi Mitchell. Watch, Mr. Rintoul, because obviously we knew he had looks south of the border. There was questions whether he would go south. And then, you know, we're pretty close to Bo over here, and he talked about how he was literally pretty close to putting pen to paper with other franchises in the CFL, and obviously they were able to bring him back. But I think for a lot of Stampeder fans, that was the main focus. But there's no question, as you talked about earlier in the show, Matt, with 75% of last year's players essentially free agents this year, and everyone was kind of, with the new CBA, nobody really knew what was going to happen, and there was, we've seen it already, there's been so much turnover. So yeah, I think free agency was a huge story, but no question in Calgary was all about number 19.
For sure, and when he finally came back, that was a big kind of sigh of relief for the fan base here in Calgary. That was the biggest question for sure. And then everyone kind of went and looked at the roster and went, oh man, where did all those players that we used to know go? Because you lost not only guys to other teams like Jagaron Davis or, you know, the defensive coordinator and Devon Claybrooks, receiver Deveris Daniels, the list goes on. You also lost guys to the NFL like James Vaughters, Mark and Michelle, Singleton, Thurman. Like, this team has had a lot of turnover. So as soon as here in Calgary, Bo Levi Mitchell put pen to paper, then the free agency period became the big topic of discussion.
Well, perhaps that's the answer to this question. Maybe it's a re-sign of a free agent as opposed to a free agent that a team brought to town. Which free agent that made a move this offseason, be it a Bo Levi Mitchell in staying in Calgary or be it maybe a Mike Riley heading to BC, which free agent do you guys believe will have the most impact on his club this year?
It's, I think the easy answer is Mike Riley, so I'll let one of you two go with that, because I think we could all sit here and agree it probably is number one would be Mike Riley. I think it's Trevor Harris in Edmonton, because he is filling in the shoes of Mike Riley. And Scott used it early in the show. Riley's a star maker, and Edmonton's got a lot of questions at receiver. Can Trevor Harris do some of the same things we've seen Mike Riley do in years past? And with the, and maybe, you know, you look at the West Division power rankings, if you will. There's so much star power in the West Division. Where can Trevor Harris put himself? Can he build off of what he did last season? I know he maybe didn't love what he did after, you know, breaking records in the East Division final, but can he do similar type things in Edmonton with some familiar faces in Greg Ellingson and obviously Deveris Daniels coming from Calgary? There's a lot of weapons in Edmonton. Can he do similar type things? I truly believe it, because I think he's got a lot of talent. And I think the nice thing about Trevor Harris, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes either in terms of interceptions, and ball security is so big in the game of football. So for me, it's Trevor Harris.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with going with Trevor Harris here. But also, I, because that's the easy one, I'm going to put out a couple guys who maybe won't have as big of an impact as Riley will, but some guys who moved and still will. And Jagaron Davis going to Hamilton is a big one for me. That helps getting pressure to the quarterback. That was something that Hamilton needed to do better last year. It makes an already pretty good team even better. And then Deveris Daniels, who you mentioned in there with the quarterback up in Edmonton, I think he's going to have a huge year. Maybe a little jaded at the Calgary Stampeders after he didn't play in the Grey Cup. Maybe he has a breakout year up in Edmonton. So those would be two guys that I think will have a huge impact after finding new homes in the offseason.
I don't mind playing on easy street, so I will go with Mike Riley. And yes, he was the most coveted free agent around the league because of not just the excellence he brings to the position, but because of the excitement he brings to the position. And that's why he is the most impactful free agent here in BC. This is a franchise that needs to get a city, needs to get a fan base excited about the product again. It's not just that Mike Riley plays well, it's that he plays exciting. Sometimes that means mistakes, but you know he's going to throw the ball long. You know he's going to scramble around. You know he's going to throw it all over the field. And it may take a while here in BC, as we've talked about on other editions of this show and for a number of years here. This is a fan base that is slow to come back, and it's a fan base that is very event-based as opposed to being ultra-loyal here in BC. Mike Riley's the type of player they needed to get fans back in the seats, not just to get wins in the win column. And it'll be very interesting to see who emerges around him, because as we talked about in the first hour, they brought in a lot of talent here, and maybe there's a player that they've brought in, or maybe it's on another roster, that you guys see as the most underrated signing of this free agent offseason.
Chris Matthews in Winnipeg. We saw what he did last year late with the Stampeders. You know, he certainly kind of maybe lost in the shuffle as guys started to get back from injury. They signed him because of all the injuries they had at receiver. He's got a history in Winnipeg, obviously. He's a big play threat. His average of catch last year was 21 yards, and I know that's not going to be the same this season over a full year, but in four games, he had over 250 yards, just 12 receptions. I think Winnipeg is looking for somebody to help Darwin Adams and be on the other side in terms of, you know, maybe alleviating some of that double-team pressure he sees. And obviously, you know, Andrew Harris is an elite talent, but he's also 32. And we know at that age for running backs, sometimes it's a bit of a death toll. So can they maybe get some of the touches away from Andrew Harris a little bit? That's going to be huge. So for me, it's Chris Matthews.
I really like your pick of Chris Matthews. I remember when he was here at Calgary, Bo Levi Mitchell, the first thing he said was, he's big. He's bigger than everybody.
6'5", 230?
He just goes up and gets balls. And then they got other good receivers there. They got Harris. That's a really good addition. I look at Saskatchewan, though. Powell at halfback brings a lot that maybe the Rough Riders didn't have last year. Trey Mason was hurt for the majority of the year. They've brought in a bunch of receivers. They drafted receivers in the first two rounds. They'll have some more weapons for Caleros there. The offensive line remains the same. They only allowed 27 sacks last year. That number could go down maybe if Powell's able to give a little bit more protection for Caleros. And not only that, he's able to have success not only on the ground, but he can catch balls out of the backfield and help in that sense. So I think one of the most underrated signings would probably be him joining the Riders out of Ottawa.
I had both of those guys on my short list. I considered both of those names, and then it came down to two Canadians, because we know the teams with the best Canadian talent, those are the ones that generally emerge as Grey Cup champions. So to me, it came down to a couple of guys who left the city you guys reside in. It's either Tunde Adeleke going to Hamilton, or it's Lamar Durant coming here. We talked in the first hour about Lamar Durant not being a player who's ever hit the potential that Calgary saw for him coming out of college. He is phenomenal in the air. He's going to have a quarterback who can get him the ball down the field. Not that Bo Levi Mitchell can't, but their offense operates much differently than a Mike Riley-led offense. Lamar Durant, for me, could be a breakthrough star this year in this league. If they can get him those one-on-one jump balls that both he and Brian Burnham excel at, not to mention Daron Carter here in BC, Durant's going to have opportunities. It's whether or not he can put it all together. He could be the most underrated signing of this offseason in my mind.
I like that pick a lot. We saw at least the tail end of last season, probably for the first time ever in his entire time in Calgary, we saw flashes of what the Stampeders saw and what makes him exciting. That athleticism. You think about some of the catches he made, some of the stretches he made over the goal line to score touchdowns, especially in the Grey Cup game. I like that pick a lot, Scott. I think especially when you combo him with Mike Riley, who was very well known to spread the ball out, similar to Trevor Harris in Ottawa in years past, and now what he'll try to do in Edmonton. But I like it. I think they've added a couple of pieces to offset Brian Burnham, and I think that BC offense on paper has got a nice potential to break out, and I would certainly put Lamar Durant right in the center of that for sure.
I think that he's the type of guy who here in Calgary maybe wasn't featured in as prominent of a role as maybe he wanted, and I'm excited to see kind of how he handles it. I'm not necessarily as bullish as maybe you guys are, but I'm really intrigued to see what Durant is able to do in BC.
That is Matt Rose alongside Will Nault and Calgary Scott Rintoul here in Vancouver as the CFL preview show continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here in BC, as you mentioned, there's a new head coach. He comes from Calgary. His name's Devon Claybrooks. He's one of three rookie coaches in the league this year. Orlando Steinauer, of course, in Hamilton, and Craig Dickinson, brother of Dave, in Saskatchewan. Which of those three coaches has the most pressure to succeed this year?
It's the one in the center of the universe in Craig Dickinson for me. I think there's a couple of two things here for me. A, yeah, you're coaching in Saskatchewan, and B, your brother's had a ton of success as a head coach. I know that they don't necessarily go hand in hand, but I do think that maybe there is looked at and saying, okay, can he do similar type things? And Craig Dickinson has obviously been well-liked for a long time on that coaching staff in Saskatchewan, special teams coordinator for a very long time. And, you know, I think maybe there was a little, you know, lukewarm feeling from the fan base when he was hired because there was some other big names out there they could have hired. They went to, you know, looked at Mike Benavides from Edmonton or even looked at Paul Lapolis in Winnipeg. So maybe wasn't their first choice, and I think that's why the fans were maybe a little skeptical on it. Chris Jones seemed to be building something. I know the fan base loved to hate him at times, but he also seemed to be building quite the culture in Saskatchewan. Can Craig Dickinson build on that? And for a province that's so hungry for football success, I think there's a lot of pressure on Craig Dickinson, and I will have both eyes on him all season long.
I think there's lots of pressure on Craig Dickinson, but next year it's going to be even bigger with them hosting the Grey Cup in Mosaic there. I look towards Orlando Steinauer in Hamilton just because we talked about it earlier. On paper, probably the best team. And as a result, you are expected to finish first in the East and not necessarily by a close margin. He's a guy who's been with Hamilton for a little while. He was there in 2013 for a brief stint until 2016, and then he's just rejoined them again for the 2018 season last year. I think he probably has the most pressure just because when you look at it, they've got the most talent. They've got a lot of guys who are still returning. So I think it's going to go to the guy in Hamilton for me.
Yeah, I think that Steinauer and Claybrooks have the most job security no matter what happens this season. I suppose if Hamilton completely tanked, that could be a different story. Claybrooks and Steinauer are going to be there. Dickinson has the most pressure to keep his job after this season, although they probably covet a little more stability in Saskatchewan after Chris Jones leaves them high and dry. If you consider the off-field, Claybrooks might have the most pressure because there's a pressure from ownership to try to get people back in the stands, and there's this lingering story in BC about whether or not David Braley will sell, and he'll only do that if he hits his price, and that only happens if the team is successful both on the field and at the gate. But I think you guys make good points about Steinauer and Dickinson in terms of the pressure that each of them face. Coaching was one of the stories. Quarterbacks, always a story in football. And once again, in the CFL, it is this season. Which is the most interesting quarterback situation in the league heading into the season in your mind? We've got a number of situations where we're not sure who the guy's going to be by season's end. Does one stick out more than the others?
For me, I think it's the battle in Ottawa. The two in the West are interesting to me. Zach Kolaros, can he stay healthy? Matt Nichols, can he be an elite quarterback in this league? Those are two pretty simple questions, and if the answer is yes, those teams will be just fine. In Ottawa, I feel like it's a legit battle. Jennings was brought in there as a guy they expected to be a starter, and then we found out that it's going to be Dominique Davis who's their week one starter. So I think that battle is going to be one that we see ongoing, not just later in the season, but that's going to be a battle that's already underway, and it's going to continue all the way throughout the regular season. You could also look at Montreal, but in the end, I look at that and I say, I don't know if any of these guys really, even if they get the inside lap and they hold onto the job, are they going to be elite enough to kind of make waves in the league?
You could probably take this question a couple of different ways. What do you define as interesting in terms of a quarterback situation? Because I'm going to throw a late curveball here, and this is because of something Scott said earlier that has now made me think a little bit, and that is, who's going to be the starter at year end in Winnipeg? I think it's going to be Matt Nichols, and if it's not, they're in some big trouble. But if you couple that with what you talked about earlier in terms of, they could look at it and say, okay, do we put Streveler out there every third series? Do we look at different packages for him? I think I'm going to take the interesting word a little bit different and just how is that going to play out as the year goes along? Is it going to be a tandem? Is it going to be Strebler only in short yardage? Is it going to be Nichols' job the entire way? I think there's going to be a lot of question all year in Winnipeg, and we saw it last year too. Mike O'Shea was asked about it a lot early in the year when Matt Nichols was struggling, and when he got hurt, Strebler started, obviously, and he did really well, and then he had all these questions. Are you going to stick with him? Are you going to bring Nichols back? So I think those aren't going away. I think the Ottawa one is whatever because it's the East Division. Montreal, who cares? And Saskatchewan, it's all about Caleros. And I think if he doesn't play well, then the team's going to struggle mightily. So for me, it's Winnipeg.
Yeah, I think Winnipeg is ultra compelling heading into this year. I'll throw Toronto into the mix here as well, guys. How much patience do they have with James Franklin? How committed are they to James Franklin? They know they've got another option sitting right there in Bethel McLeod. Do they go to that early? Do they allow James Franklin to get in sync with this offense? I think that's one to watch because he was labeled as the next one for quite some time. He was the understudy to Mike Riley. He was the guy who had success when Riley was down with injury, and it just hasn't worked so far in Toronto. I do wonder if they are going to be committed to him and allow him to work through some of the kinks here early in the season as well.
That's a good one because, you know, it's a team that I think has the potential on paper to be number two, and if they get good quarterback play from a guy like James Franklin, I think they can be second in the East Division. So I do like that pick of the Argonauts for sure.
What's the leash going to be like for Franklin here?
It's hard to know because Corey Chamberlain is a difficult guy to read as a head coach at this point. Jacques Chapdelaine is a coach who generally is committed to one starter, but even you go back 10, 12 years here in BC, he worked a different situation with Jarius Jackson and Buck Pierce taking turns at that position. I'm really interested to see, and I find it very unpredictable in Toronto, but that's often a word we associate with the Argonauts, isn't it?
For sure, and especially because they do have two quarterbacks behind Franklin who have had some success in this league too. It's going to be an interesting one to watch. There's like a couple teams who it's a sure bet who's going to be the quarterback there, and then the rest you're like, I don't really know how this will play out over the course of a year.
Because this league is one that sees a lot of player turnover, especially with import players from year to year, this is a difficult question to answer, but it's also a fun one to think about. Who is the player that by season's end fans are going to be buzzing about that maybe has flashed at a time, but by the end of this year, we're going to be talking about as one of the stars of this league, one of the best players at his position by year's end.
I think for me, it's Markeith Amboles, Calgary Stampede receiver, played six games last year. He saw lots of time on the field as a result of all the injuries, and then you're like, oh man, this guy's got some talent. And, you know, we talk about Mike Riley being a star maker. I think there's some of the same potential for a guy like Bo Levi Mitchell. You look at last year, he threw for 5,000 yards. It didn't have one single 1,000-yard receiver. So he can spread the ball. I think he can develop a nice relationship, a nice rapport with Amboles. We saw that at times last year. The chemistry is definitely there. And, you know, for Amboles, he was scratched also in the Grey Cup because of all the guys that came back. So, yeah, you had the strong momentum going into late season, but then didn't make the cut for the Grey Cup. Not to say he's going to come in with a chip on his shoulder, but I think he's got, like, hey, I got something to prove. I want to show these guys that I can be an 18-game starter for this team. So, for me, it's Markeith Amboles, and for all the talent lost in Calgary, especially at receiver, they're going to be looking for guys like that.
I'm going to stick with some familiarity and go with a player here in Calgary, but I'm going to go a little off the board and go to the defense and take the guy who looks to be the starting halfback for the Calgary Stampeders in Deshaun Amos. He's a guy that the Stampeders brought in last year. They really liked him. He got two starts within being with this team for less than a month. He was okay in one and not great in another, but at the same time, throughout preseason, he's basically been the guy getting first-team reps at that halfback spot. He's young, he's dynamic, he's ball-hungry. Wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy who ends up with a few interceptions and has that tackle count get up pretty high by the end of the season, and maybe people will be knowing his name come November.
I was waiting for one of you guys to say Reggie Bagleton. But is he too much of a known commodity?
Well, we debated that. It's funny you say that. It's funny you say that. This morning we were just kicking some things around, and Matt's like, I might go with Bagleton. I'm like, does he count, though? Because I think a lot of people know who he is. But, yeah, I think he could be in that category.
I wouldn't be shocked if he led the Stampeders in receiving yards this year. Like, he looked that good in training camp, explosive, dialed in, had a really good offseason coming back from the forearm injury that he suffered late last year, and he was an absolute stud for a few weeks after Kamar Jordan got hurt, and then he went down just a few weeks later. So Bagleton's in there, but we were just not sure if he counted as an unknown.
Fair enough. I will throw a complete unknown in this league into the mix.
Yeah.
You want to talk about a flyer? This is a flyer, guys. Only seen this guy one time in the preseason, but he did return a kick for a touchdown. So I'm going to throw Devontae Dedmon into this mix. He's playing for the Ottawa Redblacks. Comes from the same school that Pinball Clemens came from back in the day, William and Mary. Devontae Dedmon, maybe he's the next great, exciting return man in this league. So you want a complete flyer? There you go, Devontae Dedmon. Is there a player that you have to see live this season, a player on an opposing team? Obviously, the team in your own city you're going to see time and time again, but is there an opposing player that will get you out to the park to see that guy this year?
The man with all the flash, Daron Carter. I think him and Mike Riley, we've talked about it a lot. I think there's a lot of potential there because Carter's never played with a quarterback of Riley's talent in the CFL. And he's a guy who has spent time in the NFL before. We know he's got unbelievable talent. We obviously know who his father is. The bloodlines are there. I think the potential for Daron Carter to break out this year is at its highest point it's ever been in the CFL, and he doesn't have to focus on playing defensive back. Thanks, Chris Jones. He can go and play receiver, and I think there's a great ability there to form a nice outside duo with Brian Burnham. So for me, it's Daron Carter.
For me, I got to go to Edmonton and look at the linebackers that they brought in, and I could kind of pick on just one of them, but I'm going to kind of mention all three of the linebackers there in Edmonton just because they brought in three guys who have had success in this league, but at the same time, are they going to be guys who are able to produce together in a very important area? Javon Santos, Knox at Will, Larry Dean at Mike, Don Unamba at Sam linebacker spot. Can those three guys live up to the high-priced expectations that they were given when Edmonton brought them in via free agency?
Well, I'm going to go with a good oldie, good old favorite. Brandon Banks is still a guy who gets me out. That's a good team in Hamilton. They've used him so much more effectively in the offense in the last couple of years. Still flashes in the return game. I will take Speedy Banks as the guy who will get me out to a park this year to see an opposing player. All right, last but certainly not least, probably a predictable answer, but we have to ask it because it happens time and time again. Will there be a crossover again this season?
If there's not, then there's going to be some significant injuries in the Western Division. And knock on wood, that doesn't happen because you want to see all the best players playing. But, yeah, I think there's absolutely a crossover. I think you look at the big four, if you will, in the West Division with Calgary, Winnipeg, Edmonton, BC. Those teams are going to be better than the third and fourth place team in the East Division. I just can't see a Toronto and Montreal. To me, those are the 3-4. I think Toronto, Ottawa, sure, you can flip a coin. I think both those teams will be in a battle for the second spot. But I think there's no question those four teams in the West are the best. And I would not be surprised if we see three teams below 500 again in the East Division.
Even Saskatchewan could be better than some of the teams out East. And it wouldn't be surprising if they were. So I think, yes, we do get a crossover. Do they make it to the Grey Cup?
That's the real question here, guys. Do we get the All-West Grey Cup in Calgary this year?
It's never happened.
Nope.
I'm going with no. I just think it's too hard to do. And in the end, you're probably going to have to face a really good Hamilton team in Hamilton if you want to get to the Grey Cup. It hasn't been done for a reason. It's very difficult to do the travel and do the preparation after the entire season. I don't lean towards a bullish chance that we see two West teams in the Grey Cup, although I would be shocked if we don't see a crossover.
Yeah, I'd agree
with
that.
How about you, Will?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you look at this, and I think Matt picks up a great point. It's never happened because it's so hard to do. You've got to travel two road games to get to the Grey Cup. And we talked about early in the show, guys. I think we all around the table ranked Hamilton as probably the number three team overall in the CFL. So, I'm with you, Matt. I don't think it's going to happen, and there's a reason it hasn't happened to this point.
Fine, I'll be the outlier. All West Grey Cup in Calgary this year. First time ever, Grey Cup 107. It happens at McMahon Stadium. Guys, it's been a lot of fun kicking around the CFL for a couple of hours here with you. You guys are going to go on to talk a lot more about the Calgary Stampeders. We'll focus on the BC Lions out here on the West Coast. Thank you very much for doing this. Look forward to talking some Lions and Stampeders with you later on in June as they hook up for the first time at the end of this month.
Yeah, we'll have to get you on a couple of times for sure because There's certainly a lot of continent or a lot of connections now between the Stampeders and the BC Lions. You don't have to look very far to see some of those connections. Should be a fun year, but yeah, this is a ton of fun. Thanks for kicking it with us, Scott.
Very excited for the season. Thanks so much.
That's Matt Rose and Will Nault in Calgary. They'll focus on the Stampeders next. Out here in BC, Devon Claybrooks, the new man with the new plan. He's got the hat that tilts. Can he tilt things in favor of the BC Lions upward in the West Division? That's next right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to the CFL Preview Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time to close the book on the 2019 CFL Preview Show. Welcome back. It is now just solely in Calgary. It's Will Nault and Matty Rose. We say goodbye to Scott Rintoul. If you missed it earlier, we did break down the East, the West Division, and some of the biggest off-season questions, and maybe a look ahead to the 2019 season. So as we continue now, Matt, we'll close out the show with a special focus, of course, on the Calgary Stampeders, because what a year of transition it is for this organization. You look at this history of this team, and we've talked about it forever. I know some people go, you guys are such homers, but really for the last 10 years, the Stamps have been the class of the CFL. You go back to when John Huffnagel was first hired in 2008, then Dave Dickinson comes out of retirement the very next year to join the coaching staff, and he's now certainly worked his way up to become this team's head coach, and now a Grey Cup winner, not only as a player, but as a head coach. So they have been the class of the CFL. They have not won less than 13 games since 2012. So they've had seven straight years of at least 13 wins. That's ridiculous when you think about how tough it is to win football games. And I know it's only a 9-team league and all that, but that's an impressive, impressive record. They should have more Grey Cup rings than they do. That's the one thing we can agree on. So they've got a Grey Cup ring. They're defending Grey Cup champions. It was a huge offseason. The biggest question was, is their star quarterback going to return? We knew that Bo Levi Mitchell was going to entertain offers south of the border in the NFL. He certainly looked at that. And then, is he going to get paid in the NFL? Is he going to play in the NFL? Those were also two questions that we found ourselves asking, because we knew that the interest was going to be there. We also knew that Bo Levi Mitchell was aware of the legacy he was building in Canada. He is a guy that has always wanted to be a huge part of a team. And I think that's ultimately why he ended up back in the CFL. He knew that if he went to the NFL, he'd be working his way, fighting tooth and nail to be just the third and maybe second string quarterback on somebody's depth chart. So Bo Levi Mitchell returns to the CFL. That was the first sigh of relief for Stampeder fans. The second one was, is he going to sign with the Stampeders? He was a free agent, and we knew there was going to be interest league-wide. Two teams that come to mind. He almost signed in Toronto, almost signed with Saskatchewan, but he ends up back in Calgary when it's all said and done. Very similar numbers to the contract Mike Riley signed in BC, the two clear-cut best quarterbacks in this league. Bo Levi Mitchell's back, and that's pretty much what the entire offseason surrounded. That was the first part. We'll talk about the other stuff in just a second, because there has been a lot of turnover with this team. But take me through what you were thinking with Bo Levi Mitchell, and I guess your impressions now that he's back and you've watched his entire training camp here in 2019.
Well, he looks driven and he looks ready to win another championship. I think that the biggest thing for Bo Levi Mitchell was when he didn't have an opportunity to really, you know, have a bona fide role on a team down south. He said, I can still have a legacy of being one of the best quarterbacks that the CFL has ever seen. And I think that the added kind of caveat of doing that with just one team was also significant to him returning here to Calgary. And, you know, there was talk about other teams putting offers on the table, but at the end of the day, I really felt like Bo Levi Mitchell was going to come back to Calgary, just come back to what he knows. There's some comfortability here. He's got roots here now. He's had both of his kids here in Calgary. So I wasn't overly surprised, but it was definitely a sigh of relief, not only for Calgary, but for this league, because, as you mentioned, this is a quarterback-driven league, and he's hands down one of the two best.
So let's just kind of branch into now that turnover for the Grey Cup champions, because there is a very different look in 2019 to what we saw in 2018 with the Calgary Stampeders. Let's start on offense, Matt. Who are the key pieces who are no longer with the Stampeders, and who have the Stamps brought in or promoted to take those spots on offense?
So of the seven main offensive and defensive positions, quarterback, running back, O-line, D-line, linebackers, defensive backs, and receivers, The Stampeders got hit pretty hard in departures in four of those, and receivers is definitely one. Deveris Daniels now up in Edmonton. Lamar Durant now out in BC. Bakari Grant yet to find a job. Austin Hartley retired. Chris Matthews went to Winnipeg, and Mark and Michelle went down to the States. So as a result, you'll see a lot more of Markeith Ambles. You'll see more Reggie Bagleton. Juwan Breskison could be poised for a breakout year as a Canadian. We'll see what happens with Kamar Jordan, if he'll be available at all this year. Eric Rogers had some work done on his knee over the offseason, just some minor stuff. So he's looked good at training camp, but they'll use him in a cautious role, especially in the first half of the season, because he's a sure bet as far as getting the balls in the red zone. So Eric Rogers being back is huge for this team. And then they just brought in a bunch of kind of U.S. guys who have had some shots in the NFL, maybe. Josh Huff has looked good. Dan Braverman's looked good. Have really liked what Mexican Andreas Salgado has done. He's the favorite to be the global player on this team as a receiver. So they've brought in some guys. They've kept some guys who last year were in minor roles and are looking to take a step forward. But without a doubt, the receivers got hit pretty hard. The offensive line pretty much intact until Brad Erdos went down with a significant knee injury. So he's done for the year. So there's definitely some questions there, but they're looking to replace with young Canadian youth on the offensive line. Quarterbacks, same script as last year. Running backs, very similar, except you might see a little bit more Kadeem Carey this year, along with Don Jackson and Terry Williams.
You mentioned it there. Kamar Jordan coming off a knee injury. What is his status? What do we know about him going into 2019?
Yeah, head coach Dickinson was asked about him just a couple days ago, earlier in the final week of training camp here for the Calgary Stampeders, and he tempered expectations. He says, listen, Kamar's coming along. It was a really serious knee injury. It was tears in the ACL and the MCL, and he's looked good, but at the same time, looking good in individual workouts is much different than being able to play in a real game. So right now, the Stamps are tempering expectations for him returning at all of this year. It sounds like Romar Morris, who tore his Achilles in the West Final, might be closer to joining this team than Kamar Jordan.
So that's the offensive side of the ball. For the most part, yeah, they've lost some pieces, but they've also promoted within. It's not a ton of unfamiliar names that you're not used to seeing on the offensive side of the ball. Probably not the same can be said on defense. It's completely different. They have promoted from within in a couple of different spots, but Matt, I believe, if my count was correct, I believe it's 2/3 of the defense is lost. So what do we know about this group on the defensive side of the ball in 2019?
Well, the guys coming back all had good years last year. We know that, but there isn't very many of them. Brandon Smith and Trey Roberson are the big ones. And then on the defensive line, Cordero Law is the other kind of a marquee name there. But apart from that, you lost a lot. At D-line, you lost to Garrett Davis, Micah Johnson, to other teams in the CFL, Davis to the Ticats, Johnson to the Riders, and then James Vaughters, who is also really good as an edge rusher last year, is down in the NFL right now. Linebacker Singleton down in the NFL, Jameer Thurman down in the NFL, Malik Harris went to BC, and then a defensive back. It's another long list. Tunde Adeleke is in Hamilton now. Adam Berger retired. Emmanuel Davis still doesn't have a job. Siante Evans went to Montreal. Troy Stoudemire is in Ottawa. And Siante Evans is also in Montreal. That's a lot of like marquee names that
starters.
I just listed that are no longer here. So there's definitely some questions. Trey Roberson and Brandon Smith are back to guard the boundary side as the half in the corner, and they'll be outstanding. Promoting from within at linebacker, Corey Greenwood and Winton McManus, two guys who both kind of played in secondary roles at linebacker last year, will be asked to take a lot more of a load, and we'll see if they have any guys who they've brought in from the States who can kind of have an impact there as well. Really excited to see what happens on the field side with the defensive backs. Deshaun Amos has looked really good at halfback so far. Had a cup of coffee with the team last year, but he's poised for a breakout year. And also, we'll see what happens at corner. They've been trying out Gump Hayes and Raheem Wilson there, but two pretty much unheralded guys, at least here in the CFL. On the D-line, they could go with four Canadians, at least on the interior. Mike Rhodes is an American who's looked really good, but you still have Turner, Murrah Burray, you have Wigan, you have their second-round pick in 2019, Vincent Desjardins. And then on the outside, a big loss in Falerin Arimolade, a young defensive end who is poised for a great year, but is probably done for the season after tearing a tendon in his quad in the first preseason game. Cordero Law is aging, but he's a beast when he is healthy. So there's still some questions on this defense, without a doubt, but they've mostly promoted from within compared to some other teams like Edmonton, who went out and picked up a bunch of free agents. So in that sense, along with promoting Brent Monson from within rather than bringing in a new defensive coordinator, we might see less of a bump in transition than some might expect with this Stampeders D. It still might be extremely stout.
So we'll see what that does end up looking like. There are, as you talked about and joked about, that's every name you just listed off who's left the defense is a big, big name. So you mentioned it. Brent Monson is now the defensive coordinator. That is a promotion from within. He was with this team for a long time, and he and Clay Brooks actually worked hand in hand last year. And I know it's been said from both sides in terms of Clay Brooks has talked about it and also Monson talked about it. They developed a ton of schemes together, and there was a lot of game planning done with both their brains as opposed to just one. So I'm not saying Monson is exactly right there with Clay Brooks, because you're not. And we know that Clay Brooks has been a guy who's been scouted across the league for a long, long time. But, you know, Monson's probably not that far behind. And now, as he's put into the spotlight, he might not be that far away from getting his shot as a head coach down the road. But that's the coaching staff. What other changes are we looking at with this coaching staff? I know everyone's focused on defensive coordinator, but what else has changed with the coaching staff?
That's pretty much it. Like, apart from that, the Stampeders coaching staff coming back is very much the same. Mark Mueller back to do the running backs. Pete Costanza is back as the receiver coach for, I think it's his 12th season. He's been here forever. Dinwiddie is back as the quarterback coach. Obviously, Dave Dickinson is the head coach and the offensive coordinator. On the defensive side, Corey May still runs the D-line. You still have Josh Bell running the defensive backs. Mark Killam is the special teams coordinator, but he's also been promoted to assistant head coach this year. Very similar to maybe what we're seeing with Craig Dickinson, who is the special team coordinator in Saskatchewan and is now the head coach there. Killam could be a guy who maybe gets in line for a head coaching job in the CFL moving forward, too. The only guy that they've brought in is J.C. Sherritt, who retired and then joined the Stampeders as their linebacker coach to replace Brent Monson after being promoted from the linebacker coach to the defensive coordinator. So Sherritt has fed in really well. It's actually a pretty unique situation. All of the linebackers the Stamps have are pretty much 25 and younger, except for Corey Greenwood, who's actually 2 years older than J.C. Sherritt, his linebacker coach. So there's an interesting dynamic with Greenwood and Sherritt right now at the heart of that defense, but things are seeming to be going according to plan as far as changes go with that unit.
He is Matty Rose. I am Will Nalton. It's the 2019 CFL preview show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. As we continue along, and you know, we're focusing now on the Calgary Stampeders getting set for the 2019 season. Matt, you've been there every single day, and you're making some comments off the air, and we'll bring them on the air now. They're the defending Grey Cup champions. We just talked about all the turnover they have. And as a result, you've been hanging out at camp, and you were saying it's almost a different feel. It's not like, okay, yeah, we're the defending champs or whatever. It just feels like it's a business as usual, and let's go. When is opening kickoff? What have your impressions been of training camp this year?
I think that this is a really interesting group, because there is a handful of cagey vets here, without a doubt, who have been here in Calgary for a while. But at the same time, there's a lot of guys who have an opportunity to make an impact on one of the league's better teams for sure. And you mentioned just kind of the turnover after a championship season. Lots of these guys aren't talking about a Grey Cup hangover because, frankly, a lot of these guys didn't get Grey Cup rings when training camp began. Like, the group that they handed out rings to, I think it was the Friday of camp getting underway, was relatively small compared to what you'd expect. And we just went through all of the guys who have left this team. It's a significant amount. But as a result, this training camp is different because these guys know the Grey Cup is in Calgary. They're not necessarily treating it as a let's go back-to-back and win the Grey Cup from back-to-back seasons. It's just, this is a new season. Let's go win a championship.
What has been the standouts at training camp then? Because it is a new look for some guys. We're seeing guys that, yeah, okay, maybe have been with the organization for a couple of years, but now are getting in a different spot where they haven't been before and are having a chance to maybe excel at that job. Who has stood out to you at training camp? Give us a couple of names on both sides of the ball.
As far as some guys who maybe are unheralded, I talked about Deshaun Amos earlier in the show as the halfback position in the secondary on the defense. Really interested to see how he handles that role, because he was a guy who was brought in, I think he was signed October 3rd in 2018, And before the end of October, he had played in two games for the Stampeders. That is not much time to learn a playbook and get used to a defense. And in one game, he got absolutely torched. And in the other game, he was pretty good. So with a full training camp under his belt, I think he's going to be a stud at halfback for them. Really excited to see what Winton McManus can do at linebacker. He's a guy who's 25. It feels like he's much older, but he's been with the Stampeders for a few seasons. He's been an absolute beast when it comes to playing on special teams for this club in the last couple of years. And I think that moving into that Will spot, that Will linebacker position full time, I think he's going to take that job and absolutely run with it.
What about on offense? Because they are a lot of familiar names, as we've talked about to kick off the show. Those are all promoted from within on the offensive side, but who is maybe poised for a breakout? I said Markeith Ambles because we've talked about him a lot. He only played in a handful of games last year because of injury, and he looks like he is poised potentially to see an everyday role. We've seen Breskison take steps the last 2 years in a row. Bagleton looked really good until he hurt his arm late in the season. Those are probably the guys you're focused on. I know at running back, you've talked about a couple of different guys, but who are you looking at as breakout candidates on the offense?
Well, the sexy positions, the guys you mentioned for sure. There's also a couple of Americans who have come in and really shown that they can play. Now, the question is, are they going to make the team? Because it is a deep group of receivers that they've brought in here. And three guys that all could make the team are Dan Braverman, Josh Huff, and alongside with Griff Whalen. Three guys who, in Whalen and in Huff, they have previous NFL experience. Braverman has also had his time working in different leagues. They've both stood out at the receiver group. But really, I got to give a shout out to one of the big guys not playing the sexy positions in Ryan Sevier, who was the first round pick of the Calgary Stampeders last year, playing on the offensive line. It was the Ryan Sevier Tour of Canada last year. He was on the 46-man roster for every single game they played, but he only actually played in one. He was one of their two cuts every single week. So he went on every road trip with them. He was on the sideline for every single game, but he only got one chance to play, and he only played a handful of snaps, but he looked good. And this year, he looks bigger. He looks meaner. He has been working very closely with Bolivar Mitchell all offseason because he was expected to play center. Now, things have changed on the offensive line with the Brad Erdos injury. He was going to play center between the veterans Erdos and Shane Bergman. But Erdos went down, so they've looked at moving Sevier back to his natural guard position to fill in with for Erdos, which might lead to Ucombre Williams going back to center and playing there instead of the tackle position, which they had ideally looked at going into this season. But I think Sevier is still expected to have a really big year, maybe some center, but it's looking like he'll get a lot of work at that guard position as well. And he could be a really good player for them moving forward, really helping that run game.
So they wrapped up their preseason this weekend against BC. And now as we look towards the season, this is a team that last year, if I remember correctly, had a handful of East Division games early and then played their divisional games late. This year out of the gate, they've got two home games. It's a Grey Cup rematch right away against the Ottawa Redblacks, and then they play the BC Lions 2 weeks later at home before going on the road to play Saskatchewan and Hamilton. You look at this team, and you know what they have been doing at camp. We just talked about their turnover. There's a lot of questions in Calgary. I talked about it off the top. They have not won less than 13 games since the 2012 season. Can they get to that 13-win mark again this year, Matt? And how do you see this season playing out for the Calgary Stampeders?
I do think they can get to that 13-win mark again. I think that you've got, for my money, the best quarterback in the league in Bo Levi Mitchell. I think you've got a lot of young players who could take a step. I think you have one of the best coaching staffs in the league as well. And I've talked about continuity for the last 2 hours on this show. The coaching staff has continuity on the defense. Maybe the starters aren't there, but they didn't bring in a bunch of free agents who are trying to learn a new system. These are guys who are familiar with the system and just have to be ready to take on a bigger role. So I do think they'll hit 13 wins. How they'll do it? Anybody's guess? I think that over the course of the season, this is going to be a lot like last year, where every week we could see a different player on the offense stand out and have a 100-yard game rushing, or maybe someone goes off for 200 yards through the air. But every week it could be somebody different. And on the defense, they're going to have to be led by their veterans in Jamar Wall and Brandon Smith and guys like that. But at the same time, if that group can come together and live up to expectations, I would be shocked if this team doesn't get at least 13 wins.
I apologize. We've waited this long to get to this, but we've got two more. We'll do predictions in just a second. But I do almost feel silly because we talked about what the team looks like on the offensive side of the ball. And I go back to some of the chats I've had with people that cover this league. And when he was healthy last year, Don Jackson looked like one of the best running backs in the league. He battled injuries, but I think he and maybe Powell in Montreal, those two guys are obviously on the younger end of things outside of the Harrises of the world. But these are guys that I think are going to compete for a rushing title. And if Jackson can stay healthy, Matt, that's a huge weapon for Bo Levi Mitchell.
Yeah, and you know what? I go back to losing guard Brad Erdos is a hit for him kind of going after that rushing title because it changes how they'll do things on the offensive line, which is such a part in how a running back kind of gets that 1,000-yard mark without a doubt. But at the same time, this is a guy who in the offseason worked on catching balls out of the backfield as well. It was something that in practice he did outstanding, but when it came to games, he tended to drop some balls that maybe could have been big gains or even touchdowns for him. So I think he looked at what maybe didn't go to plan for himself last year, looked in the mirror, tried to figure it out. He had his first child in the offseason. He moved into Calgary in the offseason. He's a Sacramento guy who has now decided that Calgary is going to be home for at least in the current time. And I think he's poised for a big breakout year. 1,000 yards rushing is definitely not out of the question. And I think more probable than not for number 25 for the Stampeders.
He is Matt Rose. I'm Will Nault. Let's wrap things up with some of the predictions and an overall league outlook. This is your favorite time of the show, Matt, as you hang your head in shame because predictions certainly almost always are wrong. But you look at this West Division, I think it's probably safe to say because they are who they are, because who their quarterback is, we have to, you know, I know it sounds silly. We're on the Calgary radio station, of course. The Stampeders are number one for me in the West Division. I think it is their division to lose. I think they've got a lot of competition, more competition in this division than they've ever had in the last 5-6 years. That is very safe to say, and that's why it's not a number one with a bullet, but I still think they're number one. Would you agree?
I would, but I think Winnipeg is really close because they're a team who also had a lot of continuity with their offense.
Yeah, they didn't have
defense.
As much turnover either.
No, they really did not. They lost a couple guys on the interior of the offensive line, and then they basically added Chris Matthews to their skill.
And then they
positions.
Added 10 sacks in Willie Jefferson.
Yeah, exactly. And then they've got one of the most terrifying defensive end combos. They got two of the up-and-coming better defensive backs in the league.
And then Adam Big Hill had like 105 tackles last year. That's a career high.
A little bit of a question.
He's an elite tackler, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So Winnipeg is right there for me as well. I think continuity is going to go a long way. And then BC and Edmonton, I'm a little bit of a toss-up. I think it could go either way, and then I've got the Riders just underneath them. But I do think this is going to be a close division. I don't think any of these teams is going to be finishing the year with kind of a 200 win percentage or anything along those lines.
You will not be staying in a shady hotel at Edmonton in November, but you will be staying at your house. The Grey Cup is in Calgary. Who's going to be playing in it, and who wins it?
The Calgary Stampeders and the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and the Calgary Stampeders win it.
I'll do the unpopular pick. I will say the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Hamilton Ticats will play in the Grey Cup in Calgary, and I will say the Ticats win.
How about this for an off-the-board pick?
Ah.
The Riders surprise everybody, sneak into the crossover, win both games on the road, and we have a Riders versus Stampeders.
Wow.
Grey Cup.
Guy's trying to get guy's trying to get a raise. He knows who pays his bills.
I just think that would
really
be an awesome
like really you're line. Just you're saying that for one guy and one guy only, and we know as he's listening to this, his grin is huge. We've talked about it. The crossover is really hard, man. Come on,
it's going to be really hard. But that's my off the board
get
crazy.
Get out of here,
guy's a lunatic.
Get out of here.
Been talking on the radio for too long.
Get
so
out
that's
of
my
here. All right, there's a ridiculous prediction from Matt Rose, but it should be a fun year. I think because there is more questions in the West Division, it's going to keep more people intrigued because I don't think Calgary is running away with it from start to finish. They've got a great chance, obviously, to win in that division, but we'll see what happens. There is a lot of competition in the West Division and a lot of star power.
This is going to be a season where it doesn't start at Labor Day in the CFL.
No.
The first half of the season is going to be very important. This isn't going to be one of the years where you can just win out the last three games and be fourth in your division and expect to make the postseason. This is going to be a dogfight all year long.
Should be fun. We're getting close to the official kickoff of the 2019 CFL regular season. Thanks to Matt Rose. Thanks to Scott Rentoul. Thanks to you for listening. It has been the 2019 CFL Preview Show. on the Sportsnet Radio Network.